Chapter 8. Nazi Mind Control. Nazi investigations into exotic sciences did not end with flight and weapons technology. Since prior to the 20th century, Germans had delved into psychology and psychiatry with an eye toward their application to warfare, even to the extent of exploring occult practices. As well documented in a number of books, articles, and videos, there was a very definite and underlying occult aspect to National Socialism. As elucidated in Rule by Secrecy, Unholy Alliance, The Occult and the Third Reich, The Spear of Destiny, and other works, World War II was largely the result of infighting between secret occult societies composed of wealthy businessmen on both sides of the Atlantic. Eventually, the tensions between these groups provoked open warfare that consumed the entire world. Sir Winston Churchill was insistent that the occultism of the Nazi Party should not under any circumstances be revealed to the general public, stated author Trevor Ravenscroft, who wrote that he worked closely with Dr. Walter Johannes Stein, a confidential advisor to Churchill. The failure of the Nuremberg trials to identify the nature of the evil at work behind the outer facade of National Socialism convinced him that another 3 decades must pass before a large enough readership would be present to comprehend the initiation rites and black magic practices of the inner core of Nazi leadership. This remarkable statement was corroborated by Ari Neve, one of the Nuremberg prosecutors, who said the occult aspect of the Nazis was ruled inadmissible because the tribunal thought that such beliefs, so contrary to Western public rationalism, might allow Nazi leaders to go free by pleading insanity. Even Hitler acknowledged that Nazi ideology ventured into a spiritual realm when he stated, "Anyone who interprets National Socialism merely as a political movement knows almost nothing about it. It is more than religion. It is the determination to create a new man." To attempt this creation, the Nazis turned to occultists such as Baron Rudolf Freiherr von Sebottendorf, Jörg Lanz von Liebenfels, Guido von Liszt, Dietrich Eckhart, and Karl Haushofer, all of whom had immersed themselves in the philosophies of the Theosophical Society. Theosophy, derived from the Greek theos, God, and sophia, wisdom, was an attempt to blend Christianity with Kabbalistic and Eastern mysticism. One tenet of Theosophy was that great masters, sometimes called the Great White Brotherhood, are secretly directing humankind's evolution. The rationale behind many later Nazi projects can be traced back to ideas first popularized by Theosophical Society founder Helen Blavatsky, wrote Peter Lavenda, who detailed connections with other European secret organizations, such as the Ordo Templi Orientis, or Oriental Templars, OTO, Dr. Rudolf Steiner's Anthroposophical Society, and the Order of the Golden Dawn. Such groups were concerned with raising their consciousness by means of rituals to an awareness of evil and non-human intelligence in the universe and with achieving a means of communication with these intelligences. And the master adept of this circle was Dietrich Eckhart, the man Hitler called spiritual founder of National Socialism, noted Ravenscroft. Hitler wrote of his own occult experiences as a soldier in World War I. "I often go on bitter nights to Wotan's oak in the quiet glade, with dark powers to weave a union." As previously mentioned, the deeply occulted Germanenorden contrived the Thule Society as a cover organization. The original conception of the modern Thulists was extremely crude and naive, Ravenscroft explained. The more sophisticated versions of the legend of Thule only gradually developed in the hands of Dietrich Eckhart and General Karl Haushofer, and were later refined and extended under the direction of Reichsfuhrer SS Heinrich Himmler, who terrorized a large section of the German academic world into lending a professional hand at perpetuating the myth of German racial superiority. In light of the occultism apparent in modern space missions mentioned earlier, recall that General Karl Haushofer, who used astrology to provoke the strange flight of Rudolf Hess to England, was a member of the mysterious Vril, an occult society that practiced telepathy and telekinesis. It is surmised that it was perhaps through such occult practices that psychic contact was made with non-human intelligences, thus providing the Nazis with the concepts that led to their futuristic technology. Nazi occult researcher Nicholas Goodrich Clark, in his 1992 book, The Occult Roots of Nazism, Secret Aryan Cults and Their Influence on Nazi Ideology, wrote that the power that motivated the occultists surrounding Hitler and Himmler is characterized either as a discarnate entity, e.g. black forces, invisible hierarchies, unknown superiors, or as a magical elite in a remote age or distant location with which the Nazis were in contact. Although rumors have floated about for years that the Nazis captured a UFO, no credible evidence has ever been produced. Some of those who have studied this issue have come to suspect that any such knowledge of non-human technology may instead have come through Nazi occultists using psychic means similar to remote viewing, a psychic ability studied, taught, and used operationally by the U.S. Army, the CIA, and the National Security Agency beginning in the early 1970s. It was Soviet interest in psychic experimentation that led to experiments in the United States and the eventual creation of a unit of psychic spies within the U.S. Army. Remote viewing, known in parapsychological terms as clairvoyance, is the ability to discern persons, places, and things at a distance by means other than the normal five senses. According to former U.S. military intelligence agent Lynn Buchanan, who at one time trained the U.S. Army's remote viewers, the Nazis formed a unit of psychics and called it Dr. Grunbaum. This name was for the psychic project, not a person, although apparently a German psychic who assumed the name Grunbaum may have lived in the United States after the war. The name Grunbaum, or green tree, apparently was a reference to the green tree symbol in the Kabbalah, which relates to the tree of knowledge in the Garden of Eden. Buchanan reported, "When Adolf Hitler lost the war and the victors began to divide the spoils, the U.S. and other countries dividing up the nuclear and rocket scientists had little or no concern for the mystical research. Russia, however, did, and so they took the scientists from the Dr. Grunbaum project back to Russia." Interestingly enough, it was reported that the Nazi Dr. Grunbaum unit was connected to a broader program called MAGIC. This name has prompted comparisons to America's original UFO secrecy group, MAGIC 12. Could it be that psychic viewing by the Nazi Dr. Grunbaum unit tipped off Hitler to the possible pending secret attack on Europe from the Soviet Union, resulting in his preemptive Barbarossa attack? Since this ability is intuitive and not always crystal clear, German viewers may have perceived the buildup of Soviet forces but been unable to foresee the end result of Barbarossa, the eventual defeat of Germany. Whether or not the Nazis used psychic mental abilities to acquire exotic technology, it is beyond question that the study of the human mind began in earnest in Germany, with far-reaching consequences. Behind the horrors of the Nazi regime rested a foundation of European study of the human mind. Justification of euthanasia and extermination programs was provided by some of Germany's most learned men. Hitler's philosophy and his concept of man in general was shaped to a decisive degree by psychiatry. An influential cluster of psychiatrists and their frightening theories and methods collectively formed the missing piece of the puzzle of Hitler, the Third Reich, the atrocities, and their dreadful legacy. "It is the overlooked yet utterly central piece of the puzzle," wrote Dr. Thomas Roeder and his co-authors Volker Kubelis and Anthony Burwell in their 1995 book, Psychiatrists, The Men Behind Hitler. Psychiatry in general can trace its origins to five prominent European scientists in the mid-1800s. Thomas R. Malthus, the British economist who viewed war, disease, and starvation as beneficial survival mechanisms against unchecked population growth. Charles Darwin, the naturalist whose 1859 book, The Origin of Species, convinced whole generations that survival of the fittest is a law of nature. Friedrich Wilhelm Nietzsche, philosopher and close friend to Hitler's paragon, composer Richard Wagner, who declared God is dead and advocated the superiority of the Übermensch, or Superman, over lesser races, virtues, and values. Joseph Arthur, Comte de Gobineau, a French diplomat who championed the concept of an Aryan aristocracy and its preeminence over others. And Houston Stuart Chamberlain, the British-born philosopher who moved to Germany, married the daughter of Richard Wagner, and also promoted an Aryan world philosophy. Darwin entangled his theory of natural selection with the assumptions of Malthus's population theory. The result was a strange, incongruous marriage of Darwin's observations of the animal world with Malthus's emotional assumptions about the uncontrollable population growth and social solutions to preserve the British aristocracy, noted Roeder, Kubelis, and Burwell. They added that social Darwinism was perhaps the Nazis' most central theoretical foundation. Social Darwinism had a profound and long-lasting effect on the mind of Adolf Hitler, agreed Professor Snyder. He expressed its ideas in simplified form in the pages of Mein Kampf, and he made it the theme of most of his major speeches. From the viewpoint that certain people are more evolved and thus more competent to judge others came the profession of psychiatry. The term itself came from the Greek psyche, or soul, and iatros, or doctor. However, these doctors of the soul quickly became preoccupied with more material matters, the physical brain and how to manipulate or destroy it. As the field of psychiatry grew, so did its definitions. In 1871, The Physical Degeneration of the French People was published, a paper that left the impression that simply being French constituted a mental illness. One of psychiatry's leading figures, Richard von Krafft-Ebing, added to his list of varieties of mental disorders, political and reformatory insanity, meaning any inclination to form a different opinion from that of the masses, the trio of researchers added. At the time of World War I, the attempt to bring respectability to the emerging psychiatric profession resulted in a certain bonding between psychiatry and the aristocratic German government. The German military was particularly impressed with the therapy of Fritz Kaufmann, because it referred to war neurosis or shell shock. Based on the idea that anti-war behavior was a chemobiological dysfunction, the Kaufmann therapy consisted of applied electrical shocks, actually more of a disciplinary measure than true medical therapy. The army was delighted that recalcitrant troops, following electroshock, quickly agreed to return to service. Psychiatry continued to grow in power, even as its agenda continued to widen. Psychiatrist P.J. Mobius, who had lectured on the psychological feeble-mindedness of the woman, pronounced, "The psychiatrist should be the judge about mental health, because only he knows what ill means." Such arrogance of belief soon led to the creation of various psychiatric organizations, such as the Gesellschaft für Rassenhygiene, or Society for Racial Hygiene, which only served to further the ambitions of the profession. Since no one has yet found a significant and general cure for insanity, psychiatrists turned to the dubious concept of prevention. This came to be known as mental hygiene, a bland term for the prevention of mental illness, whatever form that might take. In the Germany of the 1930s, the rush to isolate and cure mental defectives quickly was interpreted to include malcontents and dissidents opposed to the Nazi regime. This open-ended concept resulted in the Nazi Sterilization Act, which went into effect in July 1933, just 6 months after Hitler's ascension to power. One of the leading and articulate authorities behind the rationale for this act was Dr. Ernst Rudin, a psychiatrist who in 1930 had traveled to Washington, D.C. to present a paper called The Importance of Eugenics and Genetics in Mental Hygiene. it was well received by those present, as many Americans, especially among the globalists, had come to embrace the racist and elitist view of the German philosophers. Nazi interest in science and psychological warfare was paralleled by their concern with eugenics, the scientific study of selective breeding to improve the human population. The term eugenics was coined in the late 1800s by Francis Galton, a British psychologist and half-cousin of Darwin's, who wanted to extend the theory of natural selection into deliberate social engineering. Race and genetics were always a top concern to ranking Nazis. We find the same concern exhibited by America's ruling families. By the time of his death in 1937, John D. Rockefeller and his only son, John D. Rockefeller, Jr., had not only built up an amazing oil empire, but had established such institutions as the University of Chicago, 1889, the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research, 1901, later renamed Rockefeller University in New York City, the General Education Board, 1903, the Rockefeller Foundation, 1913, and the Lincoln School, 1917, where the Rockefeller siblings began their education. These Rockefeller-funded institutions ensured their early entry into the fields of medicine, pharmaceuticals, and education. The Rockefellers were also interested in the eugenics movement, a program of scientifically applied genetic selection to maintain and improve their ideal for human characteristics, which included birth and population control. In 1910, the Eugenics Records Office was established and endowed by grants from Mrs. Edward H. Harriman and John D. Rockefeller. It seems the wealthy elite of America were as concerned with bloodlines as the Nazis. Another American supporter of German psychiatry was James Loeb, son and by 1894 a business partner to Solomon Loeb, founder of the prominent Kuhn, Loeb & Company, the bankers and backers of railroad tycoon Edward H. Harriman. In 1917, thanks to financial support from James Loeb, Dr. Emil Kraepelin, a professor at the University of Munich, was able to found the Deutsche Forschungsanstalt für Psychiatrie, or the German Research Institute for Psychiatry. Kraepelin was certainly a conservative nationalist, stated Roeder, Kubelis, and Burwell. But he also was a pioneer of psychiatric atrocities such as racial hygiene and sterilization, who, except perhaps for Rudin, had no equal in his advocacy for a legal foundation for the policies of Nazi extermination. By 1924, Kraepelin's research institute, rescued from bankruptcy by Loeb's money, had become incorporated into the prestigious Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, and the growing Nazi leadership was paying attention to its science. Initially, they went for the most defenseless of the German population, the children. On July 14, 1933, only 6 months after Hitler was named Chancellor of the Reich, the Law for the Prevention of Genetically Diseased Children was passed. A leading proponent for this legislation was Ernst Rudin, by then director of the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute. Leading the movement to eliminate mental defectives from the German population were lawyer Karl Binding and the psychiatrist Alfred Hocher, who popularized the chilling phrase Lebensunwertes Leben, or Life Unworthy of Life, in a 1920 tract titled Die Freigabe der Vernichtung lebensunwerten Lebens, or Lifting Controls on the Destruction of Life Unworthy of Life. This text, arguably more than any other, made available to the Nazi regime an ethical rationale for euthanasia. Although in the early days of the regime the public discussion would focus on the prevention of offspring with hereditary disease, hence sterilization, the destruction of life unworthy of life would spread as an unspoken principle, wrote John Cornwell in his 2003 book, Hitler's Scientists, Science, War, and the Devil's Pact. The chosen means of prevention, enforced sterilization, was administered by special hereditary health courts made up of two doctors, usually psychiatrists, and one civil official, usually a judge close to the Nazi Party, who acted as chairman. The Nazi euthanasia program was not carried out in the open, but instead by secret decrees, as Hitler steadfastly refused to seek a legal ruling, knowing that such a program was illegal under existing laws. It is estimated that more than 400,000 people were sterilized as life unworthy of life between 1934 and 1945. The projected total of 410,000 was considered only preliminary, drawn mostly from people already in institutions. It was assumed that much greater numbers of people would eventually be identified and sterilized, stated Robert J. Lifton in The Nazi Doctors, Medical Killing and the Psychology of Genocide. Lifton went on. Not surprisingly, Fritz Lenz, whose eugenics work was parroted by Hitler, carried the concept farthest in suggesting the advisability of sterilizing people with only slight signs of mental disease, though he recognized that a radical application of this principle would lead to the sterilization of 20% of the total German population, something on the order of 20 million people. One revealing anecdote involving this medical-driven policy was the release in 1933 of a mental patient who had been imprisoned as a violence-prone, hardened criminal, a dangerous lunatic, according to a local official. His psychiatrist, Dr. Werner Heide, however, pronounced Theodor Eich fit for discharge, and Eich was soon named the first commandant of Dachau concentration camp. In 1934, Eich was promoted to inspector general and chief of all concentration camps. Eich, whose influence and spirit within the SS was second only to that of Himmler, died in 1943, when his plane was shot down behind Russian lines. Dr. Heide, whose recommendation released Eich from prison, went on to become the medical director of the infamous Nazi T4 euthanasia program, begun in 1940. The designation T4 referred to the address of the stone building from which they operated, Tiergartenstrasse 4. The approved method of killing, ordered by Hitler, acting on the advice of Dr. Heide, was the use of carbon monoxide. In a prototype of the Nazi death camps, a fake shower room, complete with benches, was constructed and used to gas the first victims. Great pains were taken to employ what Robert J. Lifton called bureaucratic mystification, a snarl of red tape and bureaucracy so convoluted that the victims, their families, and even those working within the system did not realize the full extent of the euthanasia program. Interestingly enough, in 1941, Hitler ordered the official T4 euthanasia program halted for no recorded reason. Some have argued that Hitler may have developed pangs of conscience, while others believe that as more and more of the German population became aware of the killing, cries of objection could have caused Hitler a political problem. Authors Roeder, Kubelis, and Burwell argued that the program was stopped simply because it had achieved its original quota of victims. The original campaign apparently had accomplished its purpose and was shut down. But that did not mean that a new euthanasia program wasn't waiting to begin, they wrote. Starting in 1941, the now experienced doctors of T4 began visiting the Nazi concentration camps and soon were practicing their newest euthanasia program in earnest, the Endlösung, or final solution. The extermination of the Jews was an exact replica of T4's earlier euthanasia program, stated Roeder, Kubelis, and Burwell. During the war, as today, both medical doctors and psychiatrists were quite vulnerable to peer pressure, as well as the goodwill of the state, which provided the credentials and certificates necessary for their practice. So it seemed natural that mind manipulation through psychiatry and psychology was soon joined by a companion therapy, drugs. German psychiatrists were merely following the lead of medical doctors, who in the 20th century increasingly moved away from the tradition of homeopathy, which involved using minimal doses of drugs as therapy, to allopathy, the straightforward treatment of disease with drugs. What therapy could not accomplish through psychological means might be accomplished through drugs. This trend to increase the use of prescription drugs set the stage for the rise of the giant pharmaceutical corporations during the 20th century. During the time of the Opium Wars of the late 1800s, any type of drug was used for profit. For example, in 1898, the German Bayer Company began mass production of heroin, diacetylmorphine, and used that name to market the new remedy. Bayer described heroin as a non-addictive panacea for adult ailments and infant respiratory diseases. In the late 1800s, Bayer also promoted cocaine, which until the 1920s was an ingredient in the soft drink Coca-Cola. But as more easily produced petrochemical drugs made their debut, they prompted the attention of the major global corporations. The Rockefeller family's interest in pharmaceuticals reaches back to the days of John D.'s father, William "Big Bill" Rockefeller, who sold Rock Oil, or diuretic medicine that guaranteed all cases of cancer cured unless they are too far gone. William Rockefeller's original miracle oil survived until quite recently as a concoction called Nujol, consisting principally of petroleum and peddled as a laxative, wrote Eustace Mullins. Nujol was manufactured by a subsidiary of Standard Oil of New Jersey called Stanco, whose only other product, manufactured on the same premises, was the famous insecticide Flit. Along with the previously documented business alliances between Standard Oil and IG Farben, Standard Oil Vice President Frank Howard also served as chairman of the research committee at Sloan Kettering Institute, today known as the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, the New York City-based cancer center built in 1939 on land donated by John D. Rockefeller Jr. and financed by the Rockefeller family. According to the center's literature, it has long been a leader in cancer surgery, chemotherapy, and radiotherapy. It was the first to develop services specifically dedicated to the psychiatric aspects of cancer, to the relief of cancer pain, and to genetic counseling. Howard, in addition to maintaining relations between Nazi IG Farben and Standard Oil, represented Rockefeller interests with the firm of Röhm & Haas, still one of the world's largest suppliers of specialty chemicals. Current company literature states, from maintaining the freshness in fruits and vegetables to purifying antibiotics, we help customers create products that enhance the way of life for people around the world. Today, Röhm & Haas extends to the far corners of the earth, with sales in more than 100 countries. According to Mullins, the American College of Surgeons maintained a monopolistic control of U.S. hospitals through its Hospital Survey Committee, with members Winthrop, Aldrich, and David McAlpine Pyle representing the Rockefellers. In 1909, John D. Rockefeller Sr. extended his reach into the southern states by a $1 million donation to establish the Rockefeller Sanitary Commission, dedicated to eradicating hookworm disease. Despite its philanthropic goals, the Rockefeller Sanitary Commission required financial contributions from each of the 11 southern states in which it operated, resulting in the creation of state departments of health in those states and opening up important new spheres of influence for their drug trust, wrote Mullins. The physician who served as director of the Rockefeller Sanitary Commission during World War I was Dr. Olin West, a primary figure in the creation of the Tennessee State Department of Health. West went on to become a top executive for 40 years at the American Medical Association. The Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research is now Rockefeller University. Another deep penetration of America's education system was made in 1903 when John D. Rockefeller established the General Education Board, GEB. According to the Rockefeller Archives, The GEB program included grants for endowment and general budgetary support of colleges and universities, support for special programs, fellowship and scholarship assistance to state school systems at all levels, and development of social and economic resources as a route to improved educational systems. Major colleges and universities across the U.S., as well as many small institutions in every state, received aid from the board. The emphasis, however, was on the South and the education of blacks. Rockefeller's General Education Board has spent more than $100 million to gain control of the nation's medical schools and turn our physicians to physicians of the allopathic school, dedicated to surgery and the heavy use of drugs, commented Mullins, adding, "America became the greatest and most productive nation in the world because we had the healthiest citizens in the world." When the Rockefeller Syndicate began its takeover of our medical profession in 1910, our citizens went into a sharp decline. Today, we suffer from a host of debilitating ailments, both mental and physical, nearly all of which can be traced directly to the operations of the chemical and drug monopoly, and which pose the greatest threat to our continued existence as a nation. Mullins pointed to Britain's Wellcome Trust as one of the world's largest medical research charities. It finances research into the health of both animals and humans. It also illustrates the intertwining connections of the globalists. The knighted Sir Oliver S. Franks, described as one of the founders of the post-war world, directed the Wellcome Trust, as well as serving as British ambassador to the United States from 1948 to 1952. He was a director of the Rockefeller Foundation and its principal representative in England. According to Mullins, he was given a life peerage as Baron Franks of Headington, County of Oxford, in 1962, and was a director of the Schroeder Bank, which handled Hitler's personal bank account, director of the Rhodes Trust, in charge of approving Rhodes scholarships, Bill Clinton among others, visiting professor at the Rockefeller-endowed University of Chicago, and chairman of Lloyds Bank, one of England's Big Five.